welcome to the Monday Mile with me, Will Buxton. And I know mine is probably not the voice that you thought you would be hearing for this episode, but that is because my guest this week is somebody that you are used to hearing. From the first second she jumped onto the snowboard, she took the world by storm. A double Olympian for Team GB, the first woman to land a double backflip in competition history, now an author and a television host and presenter who reaches through the screen, picks you up and places you wherever she is and whatever she does with boundless, limitless enthusiasm, passion and love. I'm delighted to welcome to her podcast the irrepressible, wonderful, my friend. I'm blessed and honored to call you a friend. You're such an important part of my life. Amy Fuller.
Oh my God, Will. That was just the nicest introduction ever.
I just said what you told me to.
I actually wrote the intro myself and sent it to you.
Yeah.
Genuinely not, though. Wow. Thank you. Thank you for hosting me on my own podcast.
It's weird.
It's bizarre, but it's been a while now that a few people have suggested, why don't you do your own? And I'm like, who can I get to host me on my own podcast? And your name jumped out and grabbed me.
Well, I'm filled with apprehension and nerves about doing an adequate job. Let's start at the start, because I'm sure it's a question that everyone will have, which is, how does someone from England decide that they want to become a snowboarder, given that our country has relatively scant amount of snowfall?
I think that's fair to say. So it started on Bromley Dry Ski Slope.
Okay.
So South London, I used to go every weekend at the age of four. And I just loved going from the top of the dry slope to the bottom at breakneck speed. But that's kind of where it stayed for a period of time until I started motocross. And not many people know about that side of my journey. So I got a quad bike, I think when I was like four and a half.
Wow.
And we took the quad bike down to the motocross track in Dartford. And it was just too slow. It wouldn't, it was a 50cc Suzuki and it wouldn't attack the track in the way I wanted it to. So that soon got upgraded to a 50cc KTM.
Wow.
So then I was mixing with the boys. We were keeping up. So I did motocross for 3 years, raced a 60cc Kawasaki, competed in the Girls British Championships. And through that time, I suppose I developed the ability to read lines and transition in a track. So you've kind of got that growing.
Yeah.
We've got the skiing, which I kind of got bored of because there wasn't really anywhere I could take it. And then age 10 to 12, I did gymnastics, Ashburton Gymnastics Club, shout out to the girls. And I suppose that really helped me develop my air awareness. So without realizing, I was kind of tapping into all of the skill sets that are needed to become a snowboarder. When I was 12, moved to the States, picked up a snowboard, and fell in love.
Wow.
I could say that was the end, but it wasn't
the end. There's quite a long journey after that point.
But the passion started there. You've got a blank canvas for creativity, and it's a no-rule environment.
But that requires, I guess, on your parents' side, to have that ability to sort of almost let go and put their faith in you, whether it's on skis, on a board, on a motocross bike from a very young age, to say, yeah, she could really hurt herself doing this, but you know what? She loves it and she's good at it.
Yeah, it's mad because listening to this, you'd probably think, wow, my parents are reckless. Sorry, Mom and Dad. In fact, they couldn't be further from it. I was very lucky. Myself and my brother had this very outdoorsy upbringing, and all my parents cared about was, first of all, us being safe, but enjoying everything we did. Yeah. And my dad had a passion for motorsports. My mum loved being active and outdoors. So even now still, if we're in the garden, me and my mum will end up cartwheeling, we go for runs together. So I'm from a very active family. Neither of them excelled in sport, but they just had a passion for being outside. So I suppose that's really the base foundation of where now still my passion for being outside, you know, walking, movement, has come from those really solid roots.
And I guess the faith that they had in you.
Yeah, true.
To say, okay, this is the career you want to do.
Yeah.
Go for it. Because you had a pinch point, as we all do in our life, of do I go to university? Do I continue my education? Do I get something I can fall back on if the dream isn't realised? Or do I go for the dream? How supportive were they in that for you?
They were so supportive. So I'll never forget doing my GCSEs. I went to the British School of Washington, and it was, if you do well in these, you're going to get to go to a really good school back in the UK. You're going to get into a grammar school. So my motivation for that was that it would give me the platform to then go to a good school and pursue my interest in sports. So I wanted to do an A-level in PE. There were only certain schools at the time where we were living that had that. So I did really invest time and energy into my GCSEs, did well in those, got into a grammar school in Northern Ireland, Sullivan Upper. Shout out to those guys. It's a good school, that. And it was then really when the opportunity came about for me to pursue my passion in snowboarding, because I came home from school, it was the first week, and you could never have written this. Even now to this day, I look back, Will, and I'm like, how did that even happen? So I got noticed in the US at a summer camp snowboarding, and it was Erin Comstock, so somebody similar to me now, snowboarded for Roxy, and she said, you should look at this girl, she's got talent. Came home from school, me thinking, I'm never gonna get to snowboard again, living in Northern Ireland, and Roxy invited me out to their European camp in Switzerland on the 10th of November 2007. I will never forget the day. But it was just before that my dad said to me, look, Ames, literally we said it like this, look, Ames, you're pretty good at all of these sports, like, you're all right at all of them, like, you're all right at motocross, and, you know, you were okay at gymnastics. I was definitely the elephant, by the way. You're pretty good at basketball. You're pretty good at snowboarding. But why don't you pick one and see if you can get really good at it?
Yeah.
And I did. And here we are.
Incredible. Where did the need to compete come from? You know, turning a hobby, turning something that you loved into something that you wanted to do, because competition places a completely different perspective on something that we love, because there's pressure to perform, to, you know, to treat it not just as something fun, but as something that you do potentially professionally.
There was always a dream to be a professional athlete, maybe one that I had never vocalized because I didn't see it as being a realistic route. I look at the path that I could have taken. So one was, I'll be a PE teacher because I love sport. And the other is a weather presenter because I'm fascinated by the weather.
Really?
You almost combine those and you've got the elements of the mountains and presenting now.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the sporting side and my career. I suppose competition for me was a way of fulfilling my passion. With competition comes progression and opportunity to become a professional. Mm. I define a professional sportsman or woman as someone who earns a living from their sport. And at the time, competition was the route. And then I suppose I was fueled by progression, because progression is addictive. Mm. Pushing your body to new limits and learning is what is rewarding. And competition gave me that opportunity. So I think that's how I fell into that route, because I was chasing this adrenaline-fueled addiction to be better. And competition allowed that. Don't get me wrong, there was a love-hate relationship with competition towards the end, but, you know, start mid-career, it definitely put my mind and body in a place that nothing else could replace, and that's flow state.
So you talk a lot about that in your book, Fear Less, Live More, available now from all good bookshops. There are so many great takeaways from your book and from your career, and I want to touch on a few of them if I can. The first, and I guess it falls into what you've been speaking about in terms of forging a career, seeing the end objective, is that notion of breaking it down into small pieces. I think you described it in the book as looking at a mountain,
yeah,
and thinking that getting from the bottom to the top could appear to be an insurmountable challenge.
100%.
But when you break it down into 100 meter stretches,
yeah,
each one on its own is achievable.
That's what excites me about life, is there's lots of different transitions and routes you can take. But once you become fixated on a goal, or you have something you want to achieve, no matter how small or grand that is, you need to pinpoint that focal vision, and you've got to work out how to get there. And as you said, there's sometimes no clear route, but you know it's about boxing things off and taking small steps towards that goal. So let's take it back to snowboarding. When I started, I would look at a 5 meter jump and say, no way. But if I did 1 meter on week one, 1.5 on week two,
yeah,
2 on week three, before you know it, you look back. So let's take it to running. I'd never run more than 7 miles in my life until I did the marathon in North Korea. And I thought, okay, if I do 5 miles 1 week, I'll do 7.2 after that. And it's just all about putting in the building blocks.
The incremental gains.
Incremental gains are the one. When it came to writing a book, when it comes to...
I'll write a page. If I can write a page, I can write a chapter.
But it's true, and I think it's maybe about removing time pressure. I think all goals are scalable, and you need to look at the environment,
yeah,
in which you're working within, because sometimes shit happens and you need to deal with it. So there might be barriers in the way, but it's about how do you get over the barriers and keep the motivation to keep going. And you do that by looking at where you've come from. And I think that's the biggest learning for me, is looking at my first broadcast job in 2019 and then what I've just done in February, having my own show on the BBC, being like, wow, I could never have predicted that. You know?
Yeah, I knew. I totally understand.
You've done it.
But then, as an intrinsic part of that, there's fear. And fear for you, I know, came in a number of different ways. And your book is all about accepting that fear.
Yeah.
But there's two sides to it. And particularly, I think, two sides to the way you've approached it. One is to embrace that fear.
Yep.
And to utilize that as motivation and an understanding that is an intrinsic part of everything we do. And the other, as you say, is to fear less.
Yep.
So how do those two live alongside one another?
Oh, that's an interesting one. And I think one that I still am constantly getting my head around. I've experienced fear of the highest degree for me in terms of putting my body in places that it wasn't ready to go.
Mm.
And it's about preparing yourself incrementally so you're excited about taking that next step into that new territory rather than being scared. So again, it's operating at your top frequency more often, so when the time comes and the stars align, you wake up, it's like, let's talk about the double, let's take it back to snowboarding. I'd done all of the preparation I could. I got so comfortable within the environment of doing a single backflip that it had become boring.
It was your go-to.
It was too easy. And that's what you've got to do in life, is
step out of the comfy chair.
You've got to constantly expose yourself to something that was once uncomfortable.
Mm.
So you go, you know what? I'm going to grab that next opportunity, or I'm going to grab that new trick and take it out of the locker because I'm excited for it.
And fear and excitement are incredibly closely related. They're sort of, you know, they're the two peaks of the circle. If you have fear on one side and excitement on the other, when you follow it around, eventually they meet somewhere in the middle.
Too right. But what fascinates me is how in life when we put ourselves in situations that we might be worried about or scared, let's use when you're younger and you're doing your driving test.
Yeah.
Did you revise? Everyone asks you, oh, did you revise for your theory? The cool kids say no.
Of course I did. I think we all did, didn't we?
I didn't.
Did you not? That's because you're a cool kid.
But I failed. I failed first time. I didn't tell anyone at school. And then I went in the next week and I passed it because I did revise, because I realised everyone was doing that double bluff. They're cool, they don't revise, but actually they did.
You knew the question second time around as well.
Yeah, exactly. But going into that, there's an element of, ooh, a bit of nervousness. And then when it comes to actually doing your practical, so I did my practical motorbike test after my first Olympics, after I'd put my body, my mind through one of the most, it shaped me, my first Olympic qualification period, because I was so scared of committing to the goal of going to the Olympics in case I failed, that embarrassment that I never committed to it, which meant I didn't put energy, attention, love towards that goal.
Because you're always holding something back.
Yeah.
Because of the fear.
So when it comes to something like a driving test, these are moments in our life which can be recreated like that. You can do it the next week. So I remember going into that, looking back at when I was 17 doing my car test, thinking, oh, I was quite nervous. And then doing my motorbike test when I was 22, I just approached it in such a different way. So I was like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
There's so many things in life that don't matter, that shouldn't define you, that we feel...
Don't sweat the small stuff.
Yeah, fear and insecurity, but it just doesn't matter, so...
But it takes time, doesn't it? And it takes that initial failure for that to sink in. How has failure defined you, your path, your notions of understanding what is achievable?
I think for me, failure came around blocks of time where there were injuries because I didn't listen to my internal gut and I did things I wasn't ready to do. I just did them because I thought I should. And I think those moments of failure are time to reflect, and they just make you stronger for it in every element. Whether you didn't complete a race or you had a blooper on TV, I think they're all moments we can look back on, let them pass by, and just use them so the next time we're in that environment, it's a series of experiences which make us better.
How do you know when you're ready to move on? Because what fascinated me, I mean, I loved your book, but one of the things that I looked at, and knowing you now like I do, reading about your experience in the second games.
Yeah.
And you're at the top of the slope, you're ready to drop in. And you already know at that point that you're done.
Yeah. That's not a good place to be, I can tell you.
How did you get to that point? Was it just a sudden dawning, or had it been kind of growing within you?
It's definitely something that built up over time. I think there was an element of boredom. I think towards the end of my competitive career, it had got too samey. Mm-hmm. You go to the same resort every year, you follow the same tour, and something that once was very exciting and stimulating fell quite flat for me because I was bored. But I was only bored because I was scared of pushing the boundary of progression. So I'd lost the excitement for the chase of putting my body in uncomfortable situations. And I can openly say that I fell out of love with that part of it. And I can accept that because I had truly the most incredible career. I call my snowboard career the degree of life. The people I've met, the places I've traveled to, the way it's shaped me, the lessons it's taught me. It's brutal, yet so wholesome, and there's nothing that can replace that. And it's put me in a position now where you can throw me into any environment and I feel comfortable. I love people and I love chatting to people. And I feel very lucky that in that moment of darkness, when I was at the Olympics and I was struggling mentally, physically. It didn't go the way I wanted it to. I can look outside of that and see another life, a new opportunity. And I think that's a gift. I don't think every athlete has another passion. They see that as truly living out their dream, and then they can retire or move on and do an office job, whatever it might be. But for me to have found excitement and growth and a learning in this new path I'm taking right now is almost the biggest part that I take from the end of my career.
Yeah.
So I could see it as a negative. I fell over in my last run at the Olympic Games. If I had landed, who knows what would have happened, but I fell and I left it there. And I'm now on this new ride.
But that takes courage. It takes such courage to leave behind all you've known and to move on to something that is uncertain. But you have something in your locker which I love, something that your mother told you. And I think it's such a great kind of mantra to have, which is that if nobody tells you you're not going,
then you're going unless someone tells you otherwise.
Yeah. So how does that, where does it come from, your mum, that kind of understanding almost, or that belief that if you visualize something, the field of dreams thing, if you build it they will come.
Yeah.
That notion of, right, this is where I want to go, I have an absolute goal, I don't quite know how I'm going to get there, but I'm going to get there, to visualize it, to have that focus, and then channeled, let's go.
It comes solely down to passion. If you chase what you love and you surround yourself by people that are also of the same mindset, I suppose it's like a go-get approach. The thing my mum said to me, you're going unless someone else tells you otherwise, really landed and it resonated with me, and it helped me qualify for my first Olympics. I had to qualify, Will, within two events because I'd left it so last minute. I've never been through anything so stressful in my life. I needed a top 12 or better out of 60 odd girls in Copper in Colorado 2 weeks before Christmas, and I got 11th. You fall over, you're out, you're done.
You're done.
It's not even an option. And then Quebec in Canada, the event I walked away from in 2013, I needed top six or better. I fell on the first run. I went up to the top, I danced with Tora Bright, shout out to Tora Bright, Aussie snowboarder, absolute legend. And she was like, you got this, Matt, you got this, go for it. Landed, boom,
done.
I'm fifth. I will never forget ringing my mum and saying, I've done it. She's like, what have you done? I was like, I'm going to the Olympics. Like, those moments are definitely ones that have shaped me, but those few words that she said to me, I suppose I've taken them into how I approach things now. Unless someone tells you, no, it's not possible. And even when they do.
But this is it.
This is, I've experienced this a lot in this new career.
Because when they do, there's an element of, I'm going to show you.
Yeah, you get fired up and you're like, okay, you want to put me in that box?
No.
Don't you be putting me in no box. I'll show you that I'm not who you think I am.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy to stereotype. Do you find that at all?
I do.
You're just Formula One. You're Mr. Formula One.
But I'm not.
But you're not. But that's the same as me. I'm not Mrs. Snow.
No. But that's it, isn't it? But also, people see this on-air persona.
Yeah.
Bubbly, passionate, jumpy, all the time, on.
Yeah.
Does Amy Fuller switch off?
100%.
I've not seen it.
100%. Don't get me wrong. I don't find it easy to switch off, and I don't like not doing anything unless I'm on a beach having a little read of a book. But I definitely take time for me, and that's really important. And the way I take time is through nurturing my body and being around good people. People to me are everything, and so is my mental state when I nurture my body through movement. So I did my yoga teacher training in 2018, and that yoga, that solid state of focus for an hour on nothing but myself is my internal time to not think. In fact, I'm just totally present and flowing through the motions.
Does that put you back in the flow state that you used to have when you were boarding?
Yeah, it does. You know what was mad? The other day, my friend was like, you know, you're always pretty on and pretty chatty, and I see you in yoga, and you're like there, boom, boom.
Zen.
But I don't even know, because I'm so present, I'm grooving. So yeah, of course I have low days, and I think it's important to acknowledge those low moments, but not let them define or consume you. It's about recognizing and letting them pass you by. So it's like a conveyor belt. You're on a hamster wheel, yeah? We're on the wheel, but on each revolution of negative, you kick it out the side and you just keep running.
One of the big things with watching you on TV, and it's the way we met actually, is how much of you comes through the screen when you present. And you're talking about, you know, kicking the negativity to the side and giving yourself. It's very difficult, isn't it? Because you want to connect with people. You want to give them 100% of yourself. There's no mask there.
No.
And I know that with you and watching you and knowing you, that the person you are on TV is 100% authentic. So how do you then find that space to switch off? How do you find that space to disassociate what is work from what is Amy's time when real Amy is the Amy that you see on screen? It's not a persona, it's not a face, it's not a mask.
No.
That's you, that's all of you.
Well, firstly, thank you for recognising that. And I think in my broadcast career, moving forward, my 100% ambition is to continue to be myself, and I want people to take me for face value and nothing but, because I have no intentions to try and be put in that box.
People sniff out bullshit very, very quickly.
Yeah, so
you have to be you.
I'm not here for that. In terms of the switch off and the persona, do I need to switch off from being myself at any point? Currently? No, because I am 100% living out my second dream. And not many people can say that.
No, that's true.
This summer, I can't tell you exactly what we've been up to, but we've been up to bits. And I can honestly say, you know what we've been up to. I feel like, I'm going to go in here, I have found a much better balance post-snowboarding career, in the career I'm living now, of work and play. And I
That's
feel
great.
Like I'm really living whilst also finding the time for myself to disconnect when I'm off, I'm off. And people, I feel like they think they see everything on Instagram, but you know, there's a lot of things. I don't post there, and I hold those moments internally for me.
Yeah.
And that's my switch off, is going away with my mates, doing the things I love. And then when I'm on, you know, I take the time out before it. So I approach it with 110% fresh. Like, my work is very separate to my play. And my TV work, that is. Okay. With certain brand stuff, there's definitely a blurred line there, but I'm okay with that, because if this is going to enable me to continue to fulfill an active lifestyle, which I love, as well as do my presenting, then I've kind of got the dream combo. So I'd say I take time for me before I broadcast, and I'm very calm. You speak to anyone that's worked with me in a studio environment, I preserve my energy so I can give you, the viewer, everything I've got. So it's an element of preservation and protecting my energy. Before I go live on air, I'm not going around chatting to loads of people and vibing. I'm saving it for you. And then when I'm off air, I relax and we're vibing.
There's a switch, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. Do you feel that?
Yep. Yeah. Like one of my good friends, one of the guys I work with as a cameraman, says he can see the switch. He literally sees it in my eyes, and it's just like, boom. Okay, we're gonna go. This is it. We're on now.
It's not like I am on all the time. If you meet me for me, I'm on as me. But if I'm about to go into a heavy block of work, I'm in low battery saver mode, so I can give you everything.
So you can give everything.
You know?
Yeah, you're in standby.
Yeah, standby.
And then you go.
Yeah.
It's key. It's key. And I guess in a funny way with TV, you'll never have the perfect broadcast. It doesn't exist. You know, if you have a perfect broadcast, quit, because it's never going to get any better than that. Is it similar to your competition years in that regard, that you know you could always have thrown in another trick or landed a bit better or, you know, gotten another point here because you left something on the table? Or have you had the perfect broadcast?
Oh, no.
Is it time to hang the hat up?
Oh, no, definitely. I've not had the perfect broadcast. It's weird when you're on telly and they're like, this moment I'll never forget. I'm about to go live on like BBC News because I've just done a marathon in North Korea, and they grill me about North Korea and the politics.
Oh, North Korean politics.
I was like...
You're like, I've just done a marathon, thanks guys.
It was nothing to do with the politics. And I remember thinking at that moment, wow, you know, there's hundreds of thousands of people watching this.
Oh, that's dangerous.
Yeah, but I quite like it. I get a buzz off it.
Really?
But then I'm like, but I'm just chatting to my nan, because you're about the age of my nan, and I'm chatting to you. And you're all just viewers on the outside. So I actually really get a kick off sometimes thinking about who's watching and then who I'm doing it for. As well
cool.
as myself. My nan's been in hospital, and the other day, we were on Pointless. She's watching that.
Yeah,
like, that's mad.
It's great,
imagine seeing your granddaughter on BBC One,
Super
on the news,
cool.
chatting about North Korea. So I just internalise it. But to get to the point is, your tongue always slips somewhere. And I think as a perfectionist, someone like yourself as well, I'm sure you can relate, you can always do better.
Always.
You want to do better. But I think that's the drive to continue, is
yeah.
the excitement in the learning of how to be eloquent.
Yeah, that's
if
we perfect that, exactly.
Might as well go and read some Shakespeare.
Oh goodness, yes, or a thesaurus. We can just
read
thesaurus and get better. More words.
I feel like you've got some good words, Will. I could learn a thing or two off you.
Oh, I don't know. Rambunctious, something like that. Yeah, this isn't going to make the final cut, is it?
I think it will.
You reckon it will?
Yeah.
You told us about the importance of being in a good place in your body and your mind. What is your daily schedule look like?
My routine.
Your routine.
Okay.
Do you have a routine with the crazy, mad, action-packed life that you have? Can you have a routine?
I do have a routine, so to speak. I love to move in the morning. It sets me up for the day. It doesn't matter what it is, just something. It nurtures my soul, my mind, and my body feels better for it. As a crooked old snowboarder.
I mean, you're ancient.
Yeah, creaks and aches in the back. And so to move, it generally just awakens my soul and I'm fired up, I'm ready to go. But before that, okay, don't judge me. I always have two coffees. I normally don't have more than three. I go on to decaf, but I have two to start the day. And then I'll do some movement, depending on what I'm doing, whether I'm going on a little adventure or whether I'm going to work, I will freshen up and then go in. But for me, without those two elements, coffee and the movement, my routine's out the window. So yeah, even if it's a walk.
So all of these episodes
yep.
of the Monday Mile and everyone's experiences of what they do for their routine.
Yeah.
Have you garnered anything from it that you've been able to put into your own routine? Or is it, as you say, just completely out of the window and whatever works works?
I have noticed, well, especially speaking to a lot of athletes, and I think people particularly excelling in their field, they will get up at the crack of dawn and get some movement in. The people that are really, really busy, and I look at those people and I seek inspiration from them,
yeah.
and that has inspired me. So I've been very lucky to be on the other side of this, and I think by chatting to these people I take a lot from it. So Ben Shepherd in particular was someone that I was very inspired by. That man is had an incredible career.
Oh yeah.
He is so fit, and to me he is juggling the lifestyle of being a family man, a dad, extremely fit, has hobbies and has a phenomenal career. So I look at someone like him, and having had him on the podcast, I'm like, that's ace. And then let's say Sarah Davies, she gets up at 5:30 to go for a run before she works until 3 in the morning. So yeah, there's definitely elements of it. But long and short, I don't think there is a correct way. There is no right or wrong routine. It's whatever serves you. But those are the sort of two or three that I've connected with because they do something similar to me, so I can take something from it.
You've spoken about body. What about mind? Or does the activity help to settle the mind?
For me, I think the activity settles the mind. So when I put the phone down and I totally focus on myself, I find that time is most often when I'm doing some form of exercise. I probably sound like some sort of exercise nut. I'm not. I don't like to go and smash my body. I like to move. And when I'm moving, I come away from all distractions. The phone's on airplane mode. I'm outside or I'm in a studio focusing on a movement pattern. And I suppose that's the closest thing I can get to now, other than my surfing, my wake surfing. That's total switch off time for me. And it's really fun, I love it. When you're in the mountain, you're totally present when you put your body through these physically demanding moves. So I suppose I'm sort of recreating that mind space by implementing things I love within my routine on a week-to-week basis. And I feel very lucky that currently I am able to do that. So I've got to take it whilst I can. I might go surfing in the middle of a week with my snowboard friends. That's not a normal thing to do in the middle of a working week. But I might work all weekend and I might be working when no one sees it.
You've got to take your time when you have it.
So yeah, I think there's no right or wrong, but when you've got time for you, enhance that, utilize it. Even if it's going for a walk and having a cup of tea, but make time for you. And don't let other people swerve you off track in the process.
Yeah.
I think that's a big learning, and a big learning at the end of my book, and something that's come for me post-lockdown, is looking at your environment, the people around you, and not letting them be a stagnant source of distraction, because people around you can pull you off track. I think it's okay for you to focus on yourself and remove yourself from those toxic environments. I have found that better balance. Of course, it's never 100%, right? But I found a balance in playing hard and working really hard and reaping the rewards for both.
Growing.
There needs to be an acceptance of self in that, and a love of self do that. Not in an arrogant way, not in an egotistical way, just in finding balance, finding that acceptance that you are enough as you are. And I know a lot of people out there probably listen to the podcast struggle with that a lot. How have you found that in order to be able to determine that right path, make those right decisions, know which people are the stagnant water around your sort of flowing river of progression?
You have to experience it. And I'd definitely say I have, through relationships, through the bad eggs, man. There's bad eggs out there. And I think it's okay to acknowledge that there are certain people and certain personalities that don't allow you to thrive.
Or situations.
Yeah, some situations are survival, and moments of survival make you. But you don't have to put up with it. Okay, unless it's family and they're a part of your life. But even still, you can take elements of that. You don't have to totally surround yourself by it. So I think it comes to the importance of changing your environment to allow you not just to survive, but to thrive.
Control the controllables.
100%.
Take what you can affect or effect.
It's a bit cutthroat though. Sometimes, like, I didn't think I was that person because I'm quite open, vulnerably so much so that it has bitten me in the ass and created those environments. But through time, I've learned how to remove myself, maybe be a little bit more selfish and focus on what truly matters to me. And that is, at the end of the day, happiness, health, my family, and my friendships. Because without those, you are nothing.
Yeah.
They
are the building blocks.
T- to who you are.
Yeah.
So cut him. Cut the bad eggs.
Yeah, cut the crap out. I agree with that. So come on then, this is the Monday Mile.
Yeah.
How do Mondays look for you? What's your relationship like with Mondays? Because mine's horrible.
Yeah, you're always on a plane, aren't you?
Mondays are grim.
Mondays, I quite like it, to be honest. I don't love a Sunday night because I'm like, oh, I've got to knuckle down. But saying that, sometimes I work all weekend and Monday's a day off and I can have a lie-in. So it really depends. You know, a lot of sport, a lot of broadcasts happen on the weekend. So you do get a Monday off. But on the instance where it's the start of the week, I'm going into a new job, I do see it as a chance to kind of reset and set the standard. And then I see Friday as, you know, a celebration. So it's get up, attack the week strong, and, you know, really utilize the weekend to wind down when the week works like that. So I like the Monday. I don't like the Sunday. I don't like the preparation.
I don't like the pre-Monday.
I don't like preparing for it, but I like to be prepared. So then the Monday, you know, you wake up and your gym kit's there, you put it on as you get up out of bed and everything just flows. I love to be organised on a Monday.
So what you're saying is keep your gym kit folded by your bed, so the first thing you do in the morning is put it on and go straight to the gym.
With everything you're doing, if you've got an early start, you've always got to lay it out so there's no faff or stress.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Life is about...
Don't hit the snooze button.
No, just, no snooze.
Just straight into it.
Straight in, get the coffees on. I think life is about eradicating the layer of stresses in your life and making things as simplistic as possible.
Do you have a life lesson, a mantra, a quote, something that, whether it means something to you or something that you live by, something that just resides within you as motivation or as advice?
Yeah, I do. And it is try something new every day, no matter how small it is. That one thing will keep you coming back time and time again. That keeps the excitement, the energy, the thirst for life, a revolving cycle.
Love it.
I love it when I go to sleep. It doesn't matter what day it is, whether it's a Monday or a Sunday, and I'm excited to wake up for the next day. That's a good feeling. And I've caught myself 7 out of 10 times this summer being excited to get up. You know, love when it. You want to get up when it's light?
Yeah.
It changes when it's winter.
Yeah.
But your alarm's set for 6 because you want to make the most of the day and have the most fun. Like, when you're in that state, that's the best. And for me, that happens when I'm learning and when I'm expanding. Growth. Growth is exciting.
For a lot of people, it's not always easy to do that, though. It's not always easy to be excited about tomorrow or what's happening. So how do you find that that's something? If there isn't, oh, I get to do something new tomorrow or something I've never done before. Can you find excitement? Can you find the thrill, even in something you've done a million times before?
Well, it's very easy to create environments that are new. It can be as simple as closing one eye and brushing your teeth on the opposite foot. You don't have to look far or hard to do something you've never tried before. For example, have you ever jumped in this river?
No, and I'm not going to right now, but there you go.
Yeah, it's that simple. So I think more often than not, our goals, our targets, the things we dream, we lust to achieve, we make them unapproachable. Scale it back. Put one foot in front of the other, step outside and look around you.
Love that.
I can guarantee there are 100 things within 100 meters of where you're standing where you can try or do something new. For example, we're in Marlow. Neither of us are from Marlow. We parked outside that ice cream shop. It's one of the most famous ice cream shops in Buckinghamshire. Have you ever had an ice cream from there?
I have not, but I think that might be my new thing for today once we get to the end.
There you go. It's not hard to find, is it?
No.
And that would excite you.
And sometimes it can be ice cream.
Exactly.
I'm all about that.
It's that simple, you
know? I love it. Amy, thank you so much. As I said at the top, you are one of the most infectiously enthusiastic people. And with that comes a warmth a generosity and a genuineness that I'm so glad to have found. And I know that when people watch you on TV, they feel it too. Thank you so much for being a guest on your own podcast. But yeah, thank you so much for the wisdom, the lessons, are something that I know we can all learn from. So thank you for this series, because really it's wonderful to listen to. So my thanks to you.
Will, thank you so much. I couldn't have asked for a better person to command the walk and take charge. I'm so grateful for your time and your friendship. And I just want to thank every single person that's tuned in, listened and supported the podcast. And to all of those that have supported me on my journey, it is a constant cycle of reinventing. It's an evolution, and I'm grateful for every single person that's been a part of it. Monday Mile listeners, it's a wrap.